doubting them, or of asking why. So strongly, indeed, does mere truth, unaccompanied by reason, attract us. If reverence reigns in the soul and checks vice, why cannot counsel do the same? Also, if rebuke gives one a sense of shame, why has not counsel the same power, even though it does use bare precepts? The counsel which assists suggestion by reason, which adds the motive for doing a given thing, and the reward which awaits one who carries out and obeys such precepts, is more effective and settles deeper into the heart. If commands are helpful, so is advice. But one is helped by commands. Therefore, one is helped also by advice. Virtue is divided into two parts, into contemplation of truth and conduct. Training teaches contemplation, and admonition teaches conduct. And right conduct both practices and reveals virtue. But if, when a man is about to act, he is helped by advice, he is also helped by admonition. Therefore, if right conduct is necessary to virtue, and if, moreover, admonition makes clear right conduct, then admonition also is an indispensable thing. There are two strong supports to the soul: trust in the truth and confidence. Both are the result of admonition. For men believe it, and when belief is established, the soul receives great inspiration and is filled with confidence. Therefore, admonition is not superfluous. Marcus Agrippa, a great-souled man, the only person among those whom the civil wars raised to fame and power, whose prosperity helped the state, used to say that he was greatly indebted to the proverb, "Harmony makes small things grow. Lack of harmony makes great things decay." He held that he himself became the best of brothers and the best of friends by virtue of this saying. And if proverbs of such a kind, when welcomed intimately into the soul, can mold this very soul, why cannot the department of philosophy, which consists of such proverbs, possess equal influence? Virtue depends partly upon training and partly upon practice. You must learn first, and then strengthen your learning by action. If this be true, not only do the doctrines of wisdom help us, but the precepts also, which check and banish our emotions by a sort of official decree. It is said, "Philosophy is divided into knowledge and state of mind. For one who has learned and understood what he should do and avoid is not a wise man until his mind is metamorphosed into the shape of that which he has learned." This third department, that of precept, is compounded from both the others, from dogmas of philosophy and state of mind. Hence, it is superfluous as far as the perfecting of virtue is concerned. The other two parts are enough for the purpose. On that basis, therefore, even consolation would be superfluous, since this also is a combination of the other two, as likewise are exhortation, persuasion, and even proof itself. For proof also originates from a well-ordered and firm mental attitude. But although these things result from a sound state of mind, yet the sound state of mind also results from them. It is both creative of them and resultant from them. Furthermore, that which you mention is the mark of an already perfect man, of one who has attained the height of human happiness. But the approach to these qualities is slow, and in the meantime, in practical matters, the path should be pointed out for the benefit of one who is still short of perfection, but is making progress. Wisdom, by her own agency, may perhaps show herself this path without the help of admonition. For she has brought the soul to a stage where it can be impelled only in the right direction. Weaker characters, however, need someone to precede them, to say, avoid this, or do that. Moreover, if one awaits the time when one can know of oneself what the best line of action is, one will sometimes go astray, and by going astray, will be hindered from arriving at the point where it is possible to be content with oneself. The soul should accordingly be guided at the very moment when it is becoming able to guide itself. Boys study according to direction. Their fingers are held and guided by others so that they may follow the outlines of the letters. Next, they are ordered to imitate a copy and base thereon a style of penmanship. Similarly, the mind is helped if it is taught according to direction. Such facts as these prove that this department of philosophy is not superfluous. The question next arises whether this part alone is sufficient to make men wise. The problem shall be treated at the proper time, but at present, omitting